Future Primitive. And Other Essays. John Zerzan, Chapter 3. Tonality and the Totality in 1908. Arnold Schoenberg's and Quat. Second Quartet in F sharp minor and Quat. Attained the decisive break with harmonic development. It was the first atonal composition. Fittingly, the movement in question is begun by the soprano with the words, Ich fühle Luft von anderen Planeten. I feel air from other planets. Adorno saw the radical openness of atonal music as an enquat expression of unmitigated suffering, bound by no convention whatsoever enquat, and as such enquat, often hostile to culture enquat, and enquat, containing elements of barbarism, enquat, the rejection of tonality indeed enabled expression of the most intense subjectivity, the loneliness of the subject under technology domination. Nonetheless, the equivalencies by which human emotion is universalized and objectified are still present, if released from the centralized control of the enquat, laws of harmony, enquat. Schoenberg's enquat, emancipation of dissonance enquat, allowed for the presentation of human passions with unprecedented immediacy via dissonant harmonies that have little or no tendency to resolve. The avoidance of tonal suggestion and resolution provides the listener with precious little support or security. Schoenberg's atonal work often seems almost hysterically emotional due to the absence of points of real repose. End quote. It is driven frantically toward the unattainable, end quote, noted Leonard Meyer. In this sense, atonality proved to be the most extreme manifestation of the general anti-authoritarian upheaval in society of the five or so years preceding World War I. Schoenberg's abandonment of tonality coincides with the abandonment of perspective in painting by Picasso and Kandinsky, in 1908. But with these and quat, two great negative gestures and quat, in culture, as they have been termed, it was the composer who found himself propelled into a public void. In his steadfast affirmation of alienation, his unwillingness to present any scene of human realization that was not feral, difficult, wild, Schoenberg's atonality was too much of a threat and challenge to find much acceptance. The expressionist painter August Macke wrote to his colleague Franz Marc, following an evening of Schoenberg's chamber music in 1911, and quote, can you imagine music in which tonality has been completely abandoned? I was reminded constantly of Kandinsky's large compositions, which are written, as it were, in no single key. This music which lets every tone stand by itself. End quote. Unfortunately, their feeling for such a radically libertarian approach was not shared by many, not exposed to many. As Mackey's letter implies, before the atonal breakout, music had achieved meaning through the defined relations of chords to a tonal center. Schoenberg's theory of harmony summed up the old system well, end quote. It has always been the referring of all results to a center, to an emanating point. Tonality does not serve. On the contrary, it demands to be served, end quote. Some defenders of tonality, on the other hand, have adopted a frankly socially authoritarian point of view, feeling that more than just changes in music were at stake. Levery. And Levy's Music Morphology, 1983, for example, proceeded from the philosophical thesis that, end quote, chaos is non-being, end quote, to the political stance that, end quote, the revolt against tonality is an egalitarian revolution, end quote. They further pronounced atonality to be, end quote, a general contemporary phenomenon, end quote, noting with displeasure how, end quote, obsessive fear of tonality reveals a deep aversion to the concept of hierarchy and rank, end quote. This stance is reminiscent of Hindemith's conclusion that it is impossible to deny the validity of hierarchical tone relationships, and that there is therefore, in quote, No such thing as atonal music, and quote, such comments obviously seek to defend more than the dominant musical form. They would preserve authority, standardization, hierarchy, and whatever cultural grammar guarantees a world defined by such values. Schoenberg's atonal experiment suffered as a part of the defeat of World War I and its aftermath meted out for social dissonance. By the early 1920s, he had given up the systemless radicalism of atonality. Not a single unquote, free unquote, note survived. In the absence of a tonal center, he inserted the totally rule-governed 32-tone set, which, as Adorno judged, end quote, virtually extinguishes the subject, end quote. Dodecaphony, or serialism as it is also called, constituted a new compliance in the place of tonality, corresponding to a new phase of increasingly systematized industrialism introduced with World War I. Schoenberg forged new laws to control what was liberated by the old tonal rules of resolution, new laws that guarantee a more complete circulation among all 12 pitches, and may be said to speak to capital's growing need for improved recirculation. Serial technique is a kind of total integration in which movement is strictly controlled, as in a bureaucratically enforced mode. Its conceptual drawback for the dominant order is that while greater circulation is achieved via its new standardized demands, none of the tones is to be repeated before the other 11 have been heard. The concentrated control actually allows for very little production. This is seen most clearly in the extreme understatement and brevity in much of the work of Webern, Schoenberg's most successful disciple. At times there are as many pauses as notes. While the second of Webern's early three pieces for cello and piano, for example, lasts only 13 seconds. The old harmonic system and its major, minor key points of reference provided easily understood places of departure and destination. Serialism accords equal use to each more, making any chord feasible. This conveys a somewhat homeless, fragmentary sense, suitable to an age of more diffuse, traditionless domination. As of World War I, art music in general began to fragment. Stravinsky led the neoclassicist tendency, which reaffirmed a tonal center despite the prevailing winds of change. Grounded firmly in the 18th century, it seemed to increasing numbers of composers, especially after World War II, to be no solution to music's theoretical problems. Serialist figure Pierre Boulez termed its rather flagrantly anachronistic character and refusal of development a mockery. Neoclassical music seemed to share at least something with the new serialist movement, however, an often stark, austere character, in line with the general trend toward contraction and pessimism. Benjamin Britten seemed preoccupied with the problem of suffering, while many of Aaron Copland's works evoke the loneliness of industrial cities, whose very energy is bereft of real vitality. Another major traditionalist, Vaughan Williams, ended his masterful Sixth Symphony with what can only be described as an objective statement of utter nihilism. Meanwhile, by the 1950s, serialism came to be regarded as overdetermined, its discipline too severe, so much so that it occasioned chance music, also called aleatory music, or indeterminacy. Closely identified popularly with John Cage, chance seemed another part of the larger swing away from the subject which electronic or computer-generated composition would take even further, whereby the human voice disappears and even the performer is often eliminated. Paradoxically, the aesthetic effects produced by random methods are the same as those realized by totally ordered music. The minimalism of Reich, Glass, and others seem a mass-marketed neo-conversatism in its pleasant, repetitious poverty of ideas. Ioannis Xenakis, imitating the brutalism of his teacher Le Corbusier may be said to stand for the height of the cybernetizing, computer-worshipping approach. He has sought an inquat alloy of music and technology inquat, based on his research into inquat logico-mathematical invariance, and quat art music is today bewildered by a scattering influence, the absence of any unifying, common practice language. And yet the main thrust of all of it, if one can use the word thrust in such an enervated context, is a cold expressionlessness wholly befitting the enormous increase in alienation, objectification and reification of worldwide late capitalism. A divided society must finally make do with a divided art. The landscape does not harmonize. It is an era that perhaps cannot even be given a musical ending anymore. It has certainly become both too unruly and too bleak to be composed and brought to a tonal, cadenced close. When art and even symbolization itself seem false to many, the question occurs, where do the forces lie by which music can be kept alive? Where is the enchantment? End quote. All art is mortal, not merely the individual artifacts but the arts themselves, end quote, wrote Spengler. Art with music in the forefront may, as Hegel speculated it, would be already well within the age of its demise. Samuel Lipman's Music After Modernism, 1979. Pronounced music's terminal illness, its status as inquat, living on the capital of the explosion of creativity which lasted from before Bach to World War I, inquat, the failure of tonalities. Creativity is of course part of an overall entropy in which capital, in Lipman's accidental accuracy of words, turns toxic and unmistakably self-destructive. Adorno saw that, inquat, there are fewer and fewer works from the past that continue to be good. It is as if the entire supply of culture is dwindling. End quote. Some would merely hold on to the museum pieces of tonality at all costs and deplore the lack of their resupply. This is the meaning of virtually all the standard laments on the subject, such as Constant Lambert's The Agony of Modern Music, 1955, in which Henry Pleasance told us that, in quote, the vein which for 300 years offered a seemingly inexhaustible yield of beautiful music has run out, in quote, or Roland Stromberg in After Everything, 1975, end quote, it is hard not to think that serious music has reached the state of total decay, end quote, but the same death verdict also comes from non-antiquarians, a 1983 lecture by noted serialist composer Milton Babbitt was called, in quote, the unlikely survival of serious music, end quote. Earlier, Babbitt, in the face of unpopularity of contemporary art music, posed, defiantly and unrealistically, the, in quote, complete elimination of the public and social aspects of musical composition, in quote, and penned an article entitled, in quote, Who Cares If You Listen, end quote. The lack of a public for difficult music is obvious and noteworthy. If Bloch was correct to judge, in quote, all we hear is ourselves, in quote, it may also be correct to conclude that the listener does not want that element in music that is a confrontation with our age. Adorno referred to Schoenberg's music as the reflection of a broken and empty world, evoking a reply from Milan Rankovic that, in quote, such a reflection cannot be loved because it reproduces the same emptiness in the spirit of the listener. End quote. A further question, relating to the limits of art itself, is whether estrangement in music could ever prove effective in the struggle against the estrangement of society. Modern music, however splintered and removed from the old tonal paradigm, has obviously not effaced the popularity of Baroque, classical and romantic masters. And in the area of music education, tonality continues to prevail at all levels. Undergraduates in composition classes are instructed that the dominant demands resolution, that it, in quote, must resolve and quat, to the tonic, etc., and the student's musical sense itself is appraised in terms of the once unchallenged harmonic categories. In rules, tonality, as should be clear by now, is an ideology in purely musical terms, and that perseveres. One wonders, in fact, why art music, where traditions are revered, should have made the break that it has, while all of pop music, and almost all jazz, which inherited its harmonic system from classic European tonality, where traditions are often despised, has held back. There is no form of popular music in the industrial world that exists outside the province of mass tonal consciousness. As Richard Norton said so well, and quote, it is the tonality of the church, school, office, parade, convention, cafeteria, workplace, airport, airplane, automobile, truck, tractor, lounge, lobby, bar, gym, brothel, bank, and elevator. Afraid of being without it on foot, humans are presently strapping it to their bodies in order to walk to it, run to it, work to it, and relax to it. It is everywhere. It is music and it writes the songs. And quat, it is also as totally integrated into commercialized mass production as any product of the assembly line. The music never changes from the seemingly eternal formula, despite superficial variations. The good song, the harmonically marketable song, is one that contains fewer different chords than a 14th century ballad. Its expressive potential exists solely within the limited confines of consumer choice, wherein, according to Horkheimer and Adorno, and quote, something is provided for everyone so that none shall escape, and quote, as a one-dimensional code of consumer society, it is a training course in passivity. Music, reduced to background noise which no longer takes itself seriously, is at the same time a central, omnipresent element of the environment, more so than ever before. The immersion in tonality is at once distraction and pervasive control, as the silence of isolation and boredom must be filled in. It comforts us, denying that the world is as reified as it is, reduced to making believe that, as Beckett put it in Endgame, anything is happening, that anything changes. Pop music also provides the pleasure of identification, the immediate experience of collective identity that only massified culture, unconscious of the authoritarian ideology which is tonality, can provide. Rock music was a revolution, compared with earlier pop music only in the sense of lyrics and tempo, and volume. No tonal revolution had even been dimly conceived. Studies have shown that all types of tonal music calm the unruly. Consider how punk has standardized and cliched the musical sneer. It is not only the music of overt pacification, like New Age composition, which denies the negative as dangerous and evil in the same way that socialist realism did, and likewise aids and abets the daily oppression. Just as surely it will take more than rockers smashing their guitars on stage, even though the limits of tonality may be behind such acts, to signal a new age. Like language, tonality is historically characterized by its unfreedom. We are made tonal by society. Only in the elimination of that society will occur the superseding of all grammars of domination.